Welcome to the Radiant Springs Church Podcast. Check out our website at radiantsprings.com for more information about us. If you are challenged with what you hear on this podcast, come join us on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock for our contemporary worship, message, fellowship, and coffee. Radiant Springs, refreshing, relevant, real.
We are going to be in the book of what today? Anybody know? Esther. All right, we got some Bible trivia people out there. The book of Esther, kind of in the middle of your Old Testament. You have Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. The book of Esther. We have a guest speaker with us today. He's going to help tell the story a little bit. It takes a little bit of work to get these guest speakers back from 500 BC, but we're going to do our best, okay? It takes a little bit of work to teleport them back and to get them here, but our guest speaker today is Mordecai. So he's going to come and share with you a little bit about the story of Esther. Just a little bit of background. My devotions, I worked my way through Nehemiah, and I got to Esther, and just with what's happening in our government, in our world. We've had elections and politics. But this has been kind of a crazy, and we haven't even had the election yet. I think for America, there's a lot at stake. I don't know if there's any clear answer out there. If Mr. Pence, the VP nomination for Trump, if he was running for president, it would make it a lot clearer for me. But our nation is in an interesting situation. But as I read the book of Esther, I think there's a lot of things we can pull out of there that helped us remind us that that God's in control, all right? And so to tell our story, we're going to have Mordecai. Are you ready for Mordecai? All right. Oh, you're going to have to do better than that. Mordecai is going to come out. All right. All right. Wow, you guys dressed differently than we did in our time. Hello, my name is Mordecai. That's not a common name for you guys. It's great that Pastor Brent invited me to come visit with you. I don't get to speak much now at my age. But my name's Mordecai, and I lived in a time when Israel was taken captive to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar came in because of our sin. Our people had sinned. And Nebuchadnezzar came in and took us, many of us, captive back to Babylon. And our people, the ones that were not taken, many of them were destroyed. Some were left back in Israel. But other people were taken with me. You have to turn me down just a little bit, Evan. I feel like I'm cracking a little bit. Other people came with me, people that you may know like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Ezekiel, or other people that were taken back with us back to Babylon. And so that's where we lived in Babylon. And then overnight, Babylon lost its power, and the Persians came in and took over the Babylonian Empire from Nebuchadnezzar. Very quick turnover. And I remember that day. And now we lived under the government of Xerxes, under the Persian government. And so God was good to us in the land of Israel, in the land of Babylon, to the Israelite people. But there was people from all different countries, because Xerxes and the Persian Empire, I want to make sure I get this right, my trivia. He oversaw 127 different provinces and countries, from India all the way to Ethiopia. From India to Ethiopia, King Xerxes was in control of. And so let me tell you a little bit about my story and about Esther. I lived in a time where we were captives there. So this wasn't our homeland, and I was by myself, but I had a niece. I had a niece, and her name was Esther. Esther was beautiful even from a young age. She was a beautiful young lady, and she lived with me because her folks died when she was young, and she had nobody to take care of her, so I took her in as my own, and I raised Esther in the ways of God. As we were living in Susa, was the name of the area that we lived in modern-day Iraq, what you guys would know it as Iraq, the king was so wealthy and so prominent that he wanted to hold a feast and a celebration. And this feast and celebration went on for days and days, 180 days. And he displayed all his wealth and all that he had, Xerxes the Great. And so people came in, and people that were from Susa had to come and take part. They had free food, wine, all that you wanted. It was a great celebration. And at the end of this 180 days, Xerxes says he wanted to end it with a big thing. So he had a banquet that lasted 7 days. All-you-can-eat buffet, all you wanted to drink, Xerxes provided. At the end of that 7 days, Xerxes had a harem, but he also had a queen. And her name was Vashti. Vashti was very beautiful, and at the end of that 7 days, the final night, and Xerxes was in good spirits, he says, oh, we have to have Vashti come out. She's so beautiful, and he wanted to show off the queen. And so he sent his servants to Queen Vashti and says, you are being summoned to appear at the banquet. And guess what? Vashti said, no. She says, I don't care what the king says, I'm not coming. And it was such a huge setback and refusal. I mean, you don't deny the king, King Xerxes especially, you don't deny him anything. You don't say no. And so this made Xerxes furious. And so they passed an edict that removed Vashti as being queen of the Persian Empire. And so a search was put on. After Xerxes kind of calmed down a little bit, they made an edict to remove Vashti from her position as queen, and they passed an edict for a search to be put on for the next queen of the Persian Empire. And so the word was sent out, and they did it through a beauty contest. And so the edict went out, and the people were brought in, the young virgins from the Persian Empire. And as luck would have it, guess who was chosen as one of the people? My niece Esther was chosen. I told you she was beautiful. And so she was chosen as one of the ladies that would be part of this search. And for 1 year, they would go through beauty treatments. So she was part of one of the women that was chosen. For 1 year, they would go through beauty treatments. They would put on special ointments and oils so that not only would they look beautiful, but they would also smell beautiful. As they would walk into the room, the fragrance of perfume would just come just because it had been infused into their skin. For 1 year, they would go through these treatments. And so at the end of this time, we were all in anticipation and excitement, wondering what was going to happen, because Esther was up against some pretty stiff competition. And so Esther, ultimately, they would each go before the king, and ultimately Esther was chosen to be queen of the Persian Empire. She was selected. You know, and that's not the end of my story. You know, we may think that that story ends there, but it doesn't. I would often go to the temple gate and just kind of hear what was happening in the Persian Empire, and after Esther became queen, I noticed an edict came out, and it kind of took my breath away. Because as I read through, it's reading about on this day coming up that there was permission from our enemies in the Persian empires to destroy and annihilate the Jewish people, my people. And it had the king's edict, his ring, his stamp upon it, that on that given day, the rest of the people of the Persian Empire could take up arms and they could totally destroy us and annihilate us. It got me so worked up that I put on my fasting and prayer clothes. I mean, they're kind of like what you would call gunny sack. And I went to the temple gate, and I was throwing dirt up in the air. I was moaning. I was wailing. Esther was really embarrassed by me. And she sent servants to see what was wrong. And I was just moaning. I was wailing because our people were going to be destroyed. They were going to be annihilated. And I sent news with a copy of the edict. I sent it along with Esther's servant, and she took it back to Esther. He took it back to Esther, explaining. And I sent these words along with Esther, saying that it means the destruction of our people. And if you think that even because you are queen, you are going to escape this destruction, you are fooling yourself. And who knows if God has brought you to the kingdom for such a time as this. Well, this was a heavy thing for Esther. I knew it was, but it seemed like God had brought her to that position for a time and a purpose, not just so she could be queen, but that God in his providence had moved her into that position. But what it meant for Esther is that she would have to come before the king uninvited. And if you came before the king uninvited, if he didn't find favor with you, it meant... Do I need to interpret that? All right. You get the idea? You know what that means, Christopher? Yep, you know what that means? Yep. Yeah, off with the head. All right. And so this was a big thing for Esther. Even though she was queen, and I will have my servants as well fast and pray, and then I'll go before the king, and if I perish, I perish. She's putting her life on the line, my daughter, my niece. And so that's what happened. We fasted and we prayed. The day came, and Esther went before the king. We were all praying. And as the king saw Esther through the corner of his eye, his face lit up, and he extended his scepter. And she came forward, and she touched the end of his scepter. And he said, "Esther, what is it that you want, even up to half the kingdom?" That was a pretty good day, wasn't it? How many would you like to have half the kingdom, huh? And she goes, "I'm going to do a banquet. I'm going to do a banquet. And I want you to come, but I also want Haman to come." And I haven't had a chance to tell you about Haman. Haman was a man that had risen in the ranks of Xerxes. Haman was an evil man, and in fact, he was the one that had penned the edict to destroy my people. And the king had passed an edict that when Haman came by, you were to bow down in respect to Haman. But I knew how evil Haman was, and so I would refuse to bow my head when Haman would come by. Well, this just made Haman furious. But I could not bow down to evil. And so Esther asked, "I'm going to prepare a banquet, and I'd like you, O king, and Haman to be my guests." And the king was delighted. They brought in Haman, and Haman thought, "Whoo! Not only have I got favor in presence of the king, but now the queen likes me." And he was pretty excited. And so they made preparations, and they invited Xerxes and Haman to lunch. And they had the meal. The great meal was served. And at the end of the meal, the king said to Esther, "What is it you want, even up to half the kingdom?" And Esther wasn't quite ready to pop the question yet. And she says, "Well, king, I'd like to invite both of you back tomorrow for another meal." The king says, "Okay, you can keep me waiting." Well, Haman left the meeting just all excited and happy, and he passed me by. And I ruined his day because I refused to bow. And what I didn't know is as he left that encounter, it was so infuriated him that he began to build gallows to hang me on in his front yard. 75 feet high, he began the construction. Of course, he didn't know my relation to Queen Esther. And so he went home, had the gallows being built. And that night, Xerxes went to bed. At least he tried to go to bed, but he couldn't get to sleep. Any of you ever have problems with that in this day and age? Have that problem? He couldn't get to sleep. And so he had his minutes read, just his oracles and happenings over what had happened back a few years ago. And in there was recorded a day that when I was hanging out at the temple, remember I like to hang out at the temple gate? When I was hanging out there one day, I heard two guys, two servants of the king that were plotting to kill the king. And so I reported it to Esther, and they investigated and they found it to be true, and so they had those men tried and killed. But I was never rewarded. It wasn't a big deal, but I was never rewarded. Well, wouldn't you know, the king couldn't sleep that night, and so he had his servants read from all these, you know, minutes. And he thought that should surely put him to sleep, right? Okay? And as he was reading through that, he came to the account where I had reported what this plot to kill him. And he asked his servants, he said, "So what did we do for Mordecai? What did they do for me?" And the servant says, "Well, nothing was done for Mordecai." And this bothered the king. And so it so bothered him that as the daylight was coming up, he says, "So who's in the court? We need to deal with this, and we need to deal with this now. We need to honor Mordecai." And the servants looked out in the court, and they said, "Well, Haman's out there." And Haman was there to ask the request that he could hang Mordecai that day. And so he was all anxious. He's ready to go. He wants to get Mordecai, me, hung up there. And so they see Haman out in the court, and so the king calls in Haman, and the king asks Haman, "So what would you do for a man that you would want to honor and exalt and lift up?" And Haman's thinking, he's asking me how to honor me. And so Haman says, how would I want to be honored? Well, I would like to be led through the street on a horse that the king has ridden. I would like to wear a robe that the king has put on and worn. And I'd like to have a crown on my head that the king has worn. Okay? And then for one of the nobles in the king's palace to go before me and shout, "This is what happens," or "This is what is done for those the king honors and respects." And the king thought it was such a good idea. He says, "Excellent. I want you to go out there and do that for Mordecai, for me." And so they found me. I was just at home, kind of taking care of business. And they came, put me on this horse, and put a robe on me and a crown. And Haman got to lead me through the streets, talking about how great I was, how the king loved me. Oh, what a great day. When we had finished up, Haman got back to his house to find out. He kind of wept the whole way home, you know what I mean? He kind of, what do you call that? Yes, he was humbled and humiliated. There's an expression you guys use, but I'll think of it here in a little bit. But he got home and told his wife the discouraging news, and then the servants came and said, "Hey, you need to get ready because it's time to get to the banquet with Queen Esther." And so he made his way to be with the king and Queen Esther. They had the meal, and finally the king says, "So what is the question? What is it that you want of me, Queen Esther?" And Esther says, "I want protection of my people. An edict has been passed that will totally destroy myself and my people." And the king says, "Well, who's responsible for this?" And she goes, "None other than wicked Haman." And Haman thought he had had a bad day until that happened. The king was furious again, and so he went out into the garden to cool off. He was just red, just furious. He went out into the garden to cool off and collect himself. Haman, on the other hand, was pleading for his life. Okay, he was groping at Esther's feet for his life, that his life would be spared. And when the king came back in and he saw Haman actually in physical contact with Esther and kind of throwing himself at Esther's feet, he says, "Are you going to insult or assault the queen in front of me right now in my presence?" And the servants of the king said, "You know what? Haman has gallows right out in front of his place that he was going to hang Mordecai on." And the king says, "Excellent. Go hang Haman on his own gallows." And he was. He was hung that day. Esther then met with the king. And they passed an edict. They couldn't reverse the one that Haman had passed through the king, but they were able to pass another edict that allowed the Jewish people to defend themselves. And on that day, they were able to destroy their enemies, and actually, the Jewish people, it was a great day of victory for them. And Esther was given Haman's property, estate, all that he owned. And eventually, the king promoted me till I was second in command of all of Persia. Not bad for a captive, a no-name from Israel. And that is my story. That is my story. I'm going to turn it back to your pastor. I encourage you to go and read the book of Esther today. But there's three points I want to recap on what Mordecai had to say. All right, kids, are you listening? Okay. What do we learn in Esther? We learn that God is ultimately in charge. Don't you? God is ultimately in charge, whether it is from Vashti being removed as queen, Esther being brought through the ranks so she wins the beauty contest, Mordecai discovering the plot against the king, the sleepless night of the king where he discovers that he forgot to honor Mordecai, and he reads about what he did, Haman being hung on his own gallows, Mordecai being elevated to the second command, the Jews being unable to defend themselves. There's just too many small details. God is ultimately in control. And when you look at our nation, sometimes we think, oh, this is going to happen, or this is going to happen. You watch the news too much. And we have to remind ourselves that God ultimately is in control. God's ultimately in control. And even in a secular government, a secular society, God was able to elevate the people he wanted to. He was able to take a Mordecai that was a no-name in society and elevate him to second command. Think of Joseph. Joseph came from prison, right? To be the second of command. God is able to elevate the people he wants within a government or society to the place. And it doesn't always have to happen through elections. It can. But God has his ways to work around that. Secondly, we see that we must do our part. Think of all of what happened. Mordecai had to raise Esther in a godly way. Mordecai stayed involved in the daily events of what happened in his kingdom. He was willing to stand up for something. He wasn't going to bow down to Haman. Esther put her life on the line to make an appeal before the king. How many of you would be willing to do that for your people, for your nation, for your God? Esther, Mordecai, and others fasted and prayed prior to Esther going in before the king. You know, we emphasize in our culture right now, we emphasize the right to vote. And that is our right as a citizen, right? But if that's the extent of your involvement for our nation, I put much more weight on prayer. I know we need to vote, but if we're not even fasting and praying for our nation, how serious are we about concern for our nation? We must do our part. You know, even on the day that the edict went out for the destruction of the Jews, they were able to defend themselves, but they still had to defend themselves, right? So they wouldn't be destroyed. Serving God involves also us doing our part. God's ultimately in control, but we also have to be his hands and feet, and we have to do our part. The third thing that I see is that evil will eventually be destroyed. I love the book of Esther. Haman builds these gallows and for himself, right? The tables are turned. He sets up a day of destruction for the Jews, but it ends up being a day of victory for the Jews. Evil, whether it's in the form of terrorism, murder, human trafficking, the crimes that plague our nation, evil will be destroyed. And we learn that from the book of Esther. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19. Solomon says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they come and say, 'Come, let us lay low for blood,' we're going to ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all the precious goods, and we shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us, and we'll have one more purse. My son, do not walk in the ways with them, and hold back your foot from their paths. For their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain a net is set in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy and is unjust for unjust gain. It takes away the life of those it possesses. Haman, right? He plotted evil and it came back to bite him and took his own life. I'm going to have the musicians come. How does all this apply to us today? I think in many of the ways. God will accomplish his plans in this world regardless who's in the White House, what evil lurks in the shadows of this world. Even in a secular society, God is able to elevate righteous people like Mordecai, Joseph, Esther to accomplish his purpose in his will. We have to do our part, right? We vote. What else do we do? Pray. We need to pray. And lastly, we need to understand and rest in the fact that God is in control. And he will not allow evil to go unjudged. He will not allow evil to be unjudged. Mysterious ways. That's why I like the Old Testament. We see how God works. I still don't understand all the ways of God. But if you think you have God figured out and how he's going to work out the election this fall, you might be surprised. If you think all the events that take place in our world, we only see a small piece, but he sees it all. And in the book of Esther, we see that God has his plans, and he will make sure his plans succeed and accomplish his will. Amen. Would you stand this morning? I pray that you, one, have some hope in this hour. Two, that we don't take things for granted, that we do our part. And I believe it's more than going to the polling place on the election day and voting. I think we need to find our place on our knees and come before God for our nation. And if it takes an election to get us to pray, then I guess so be it. But we need to be a people of prayer 24/7, seeking God. Amen. We're going to close with a chorus. There'll be those at the back. Victor and Yolanda will be in the back. And Josh, help us. If you have a prayer request or need this morning, they'll be there to pray with you. Just look to the Lord in the prayer this morning, but also just worship him in this song. And great are you, Lord.